The following episode of TOEFOP is rated MA for mature audiences. It may contain sexual references, time travel references, allegations of binge misconduct, and mild coarse language. TOEFOP advises that this episode is not suitable for anyone under the age of 15 or anyone who thinks a comedy conversation between two old mates sounds like a terrible idea for a show. Minors must be accompanied by a parent or guardian. This is John Deek speaking.
Everyone relax, this is TOEFOP. I'm Charlie Clawson.
I'm Will Anderson, and we just were pretty bloody Aussie just then because we were in the middle of a discussion about some other things, whether we had to record an ad for the podcast, that sort of stuff, and then we realised we didn't have to do anything else, and I just looked at you and I said, let's do a bloody TOEFOP, eh?
I like it. We don't, because we're not the blokiest of, like, you know,
do you think podcasts. The TOEFOP 12, the Macho Fop, quest has revealed to us that perhaps we do, you know, have a connection to that, you know, more
alternative view of machismo.
Yeah, exactly.
I think so.
We've been able to get comfortable with our own machismo. We're not embarrassed by the fact of what we can't do. We're impressed by what we can do.
I've been doing a lot of traveling the last 2 weeks, been in three different states, and I've seen a lot of radio billboards, and the one thing that struck me is I am not blokey enough for radio, because it felt like every commercial radio billboard is blokes. And I know you've done commercial radio, but you weren't the bloke. You were you were with blokes.
No, I was on a team of people where I would stand where the woman in the team would not listen. But you work on a radio station where they don't care about having a woman in the on-air team. So I would fill that role, I guess. No, I mean, there is a very generic, you know, I mean, look, there's not that much you can do with, say, two or three people, you know, on a poster for a radio show that just has to be immediately read from somebody, and they've just got to apparently just look at that and go, oh.
They seem like three people I want to listen to.
I know what they look like. Now I want to know what they sound like. Get me a radio.
Well, TOEFOP 12 aside, how do you feel you go in an ultra kind of blokey environment?
Oh, I'm fine. Yeah.
Because of the country?
Yeah, because of the country. Yeah. But I'm also a chameleon. Like, I don't care to be.
A chameleon.
Yeah, I don't care to be one. Like, it's not my, like, I've often thought that my, well, I watch a lot of, as you know, I can't stop talking about all these cult documentaries I've been watching and, like, I've been reading about QAnon. I am a conspiracy theory theorist at the moment. Like, I'm just fascinated by those same thinking patterns that suck people into. I think part of it is living in the part of the world I'm living in where you're surrounded a bit more by people who, you know, believe in some shit that is just not true or backed in any scientific way. And
they don't believe in the truth sandwich.
Exactly, right?
They have a truth slurpee.
But I think for me, it's just meant that, like, I think part of my fascination is that I recognize some of similar traits in these people to things that I know that I'm instinctively good at when I'm, like, you know, I can rally a group of people together around ideas. Like, I mean, that's really what stand-up is, right? Like, it wouldn't take too much to tweak that into, like, I'm picking up a whole bunch of tips is what I'm saying. I've watched The Vow. I've taken some notes. But this idea that there are these, particularly with, like, what happened at NXIVM, the parallels between it and Scientology, because basically the leader of NXIVM just went away and found a whole bunch of other things that had worked, like studied L. Ron Hubbard and was just like...
So he actually went... It wasn't a side product of his path. He actually was like, I am going to start a cult. Maybe not that expressly, but essentially that's what he was doing.
Yeah, basically he was a con man previous to that.
He did a course. He went to TAFE.
Well,
cult TAFE.
He was kind of born a con man, and his original thing, he was quite well known for a like, what do you call those, like an Amway type scheme where it's like basically it's multi-level marketing. So he had a multi-level marketing scheme and, you know, made a whole bunch of money, but then it all fell apart because those things do, because they're, you know, they're Ponzi schemes, right? So he did that, and then he met this woman who was like a hypnotist and, like, you know, like a behavioral psychologist, and knew all these ways to sort of, like, technically manipulate people. And then he just went away and jive bunnied a whole bunch of other spiritual texts and just went, how do you control people? What are these messages? And just like cribbed them all together into like a perfect, so you want to start a cult ideology.
I love that you didn't go straight to he avalanched. You went to he drive bunny.
Which even then would have been a very dated reference. But yes, you're right. He jived bunny. Jive bunny, the original avalanches.
Because it took me a second to work out what you meant. It's like, well, there's an animated cartoon rabbit. Like dancing.
Come on, everybody. Come on, everybody.
Jive bunny.
Yeah.
Did it get to the top of the charts?
I reckon Jive Bunny was, okay, I'm going to have to open up my computer.
I feel like in Australia it was number one because we have a track record of making novelty songs number one, probably second only to the United Kingdom, right?
Right. So I would say that Jive Bunny made it to number one in Australia. So let's see. Jive Bunny. Let's see if we can find some information on Jive Bunny. Jive Bunny and the Master Mixers have their own Wikipedia page. So this is a good start. Let's see. We're a British novelty pop music act. Okay. The face of the group was Jive Bunny, a cartoon rabbit who appeared in the videos.
And from my memory, like a kind of shittily animated cartoon rabbit. It wasn't on the level of like Warner Brothers or Disney. It was kind of like a shitty, not even a Fido Dido. It was a shitty hand-drawn rabbit, right?
Yeah. And also as a human being in a costume. So there was
an actual like... Jive Cash
Bunny.
Cow.
Yeah. Cash Cow style Jive Bunny. Worked on a British morning television program. So Jive Bunny, yes. So not just the cartoon, but also a human being in a costume. So
hang on. I imagine that's for live performances. So is it like Daft Punk where Jive Bunny would come out to the decks and just play all like old-timey records one after the other and the crowd would go apeshit?
Well, so in the year 1989, let me take you back to the year 1989, Charlie.
It was a different time, Will. Batman had never had a cinematic representation before. Indiana Jones was about to set off on his last crusade.
And a British novelty act by the name of Jive Bunny captured the attention of the world. Do you remember the name of any of Jive Bunny's? And here's the first thing that came as a surprise to me, that there was more than one Jive Bunny track.
I seem to remember there being at least two. Mm. The first one, I thought you gave it away before. Isn't it called Come On Everybody?
No, it's not. None of them are called Come On Everybody.
Was the album called Come On Everybody?
I don't know.
Think Jive Bunny, you think, come on, everybody. Come on, everybody.
Maybe someone at the record company was, we just don't think you could call your album Come On Everybody.
Look, we had Come On Eileen and we got away with that.
Seriously, we're not going to tip. You know what? We've had to pay off a lot of Eileen's, to be honest.
We actually sold a TV show to Australia called Come On Kids. We couldn't believe we got that one through. We had another one called Come On Altar Boys, but we thought, oh, maybe that's stretching it. Catholic Church has a lot of money to sue.
All right. So, Swing the Mood, I believe, is the name of the song.
It's all swing music, which, if you didn't have to look at it, describes swing music.
People doing that old-timey dancing where they throw each other around and their legs go backward and forwards behind them.
Yeah, that's what I would say. Saxophones, maybe?
Yeah, probably. Or like clarinets or like trumpets or like anyway.
Something. Wind sections.
Yeah, exactly. Horns.
And a drummer who's like... wearing a suit.
All right, so...
oversized suits, choreographed dancing.
Their first number one was a song, a compilation, a mix called Swing the Mood. Their debut album was not called Come On Everybody. Their debut album was called Jive Bunny, colon, the album.
But not the symbol colon. It's just Jive Bunny bent over.
Swing the Mood is a song by Jive Bunny and the Mixmasters from their debut album, Jive Bunny, the album. Produced by the father and son. Oh.
Father and son.
Father and son.
That's heartwarming.
This is really nice. Yeah, mum's in the kitchen just going, what are you guys doing in the... We're working on our... you're playing with your Jive Bunny again, are you?
Well, you said they're English, right? So it'd be more like, oi! What are you doing in there? Blimey! Stop playing them Bloomin' Swing records!
Your fish and chips are getting cold.
Oh, it's always raining here. I've got terrible teeth.
So produced by the father and son DJ team of Andy and John Pickles. Don't know why that's.
Why didn't they just call it father and son Pickles? Pickles. Like, it makes as much sense as trying.
Big
funny.
Pickle, little pickle.
That's actually a good rap name, Big Pickle.
Big Pickle.
Call me Big Pickle. My lyrics, they do tickle. In your brain, they will stickle. You'll have to carve them out with a sickle. I'm Big Pickle.
It's like 5 Mile. So they're a dad and son, the Pickles, Big Pickle and Little Pickle, working together on Jive Bunny. So they're... Glenn Miller's In The Mood is the song we're right. thinking
Swing
of.
That mood.
Yeah, so copyright problems caused the re-recorded version to be released. Despite this version being derided by critics, it nevertheless became a massive hit in the United Kingdom, spending 5 weeks at number one on the UK singles chart in July and August.
We knew that was going to happen.
1989. Okay. All right. So... that's track number one, Swing the Mood.
So how many songs could they possibly have made in that first
well,
album?
You were right that you said that it was at least two.
Okay. But is it more of a, what do you call it? Not like EP. What's the other thing when it's like a short release? Like
I don't know, but there's
is
at
it
least,
less than five?
Okay. Well, I don't know how many tracks there are on the entire thing. Sorry. No, this is how many tracks they released that sold a lot of albums.
Two.
So three.
Oh, okay.
Swing the Mood, That's What I Like, and Let's Party, all three songs reached number one during 1989.
So they released three singles in the same year.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they all made it to number one.
Talk about double dipping and triple dipping. Why not though? Like, people seem to like that shit. Why don't we shove them all down their throats? It's not like the book studio time. Just the Pickles will sit there with their bloody tape decks and just cut songs back and forth.
Like, just imagine that. Like, I mean, I know you lost your dad at a younger age, but I just can't. And my brother works, I guess, on the farm with my dad. You know, they collaborate together. But imagine if something they did on the farm
became so huge.
Yeah. Like they just invented some new technique. Like they found like some extra hidden teat on a cow that produced chocolate milk. And like, you know.
Come on, everybody.
Come on, everybody.
Get your milk. Get chocolate milk. I reckon I'd be interested to know if the father was a musician, his son grew up, you know, he'd be playing his son these old records that he loved, but his son was more of a, like if it was a movie, the son's like, you know, he's all into electronic music and stuff like that. And then his dad's like, you always listen to bloody terrible music. And that's not pretty. Core Blimey. Michael Caine. You always listen to terrible bloody music. So, and he puts on like his finger, listen to that. It's Steve Miller. And then the son's like, Core Blimey. Dad. Oh, that sounds good. I'm going to play that on my tape. In 1989, what are they cutting on?
Yeah, well, reel-to-reel, tape decks.
I'm going to cut them together, my reel-to-reel. And then...
No, I think it was old records. I think there was like... I think they're saying here that it was old records because Dad had the... Hang on, all right.
Do they have any info on what they did for a living? Are they musicians? Was this a hobby? I need to know.
Doncaster DJ and producer... Okay. Sorry. Doncaster DJ and producer Les Hemstock created the original Swing the Mood. It was taken from there and developed as a single release by father and son team, John and Andrew Pickles. So they've just come in and
Okay. So they're not the actual.
The name Jive Bunny was devised by Andy Pickles. So,
but they're like Stan Lee to the other guys, Jack Kirby. Jack Kirby created all the pitches and Stan Lee was kind of like, hey, this is how you get it out there.
Yeah, but Andy Pickles, young Andy,
yeah,
he was the one who said, hey,
put a two rabbit words. On it. You know two things that kids love? Jive and bunnies. Put them together. Bunny Jive. Wait a minute. And then he moves the words around. Jive Bunny stands back. Puts his hand to his mouth. Oh, my God, I've done it.
It's like,
I've cracked the code. We're going to be rich.
Come on, everybody. So, yeah, three number one singles. 1989 was the year of... Okay, so say you're Jive Bunny and the Mixmasters.
Okay. And so that's just a... But that's like the Gorillaz, right? Saying they're not... There's no one else. It's just the Pickles and Chris Hemsworth. What was his name?
Oh, DJ. This is interesting. Here's some album details of Jive Bunny, okay. The album. So Jive Bunny, the album, made it to... let's start with in the UK. What did the album? So it had three number one singles off it, but did the album make it to number one in the UK?
I'm going to say yes.
No, surprisingly. Oh. But made it to number two.
Right. I want to know what the B-sides of Swing the Mood are.
Some real
hang on. So what's the album called? The Jive Bunny, the album.
Jive Bunny, the album.
There's going to be some B-sides.
Okay.
What didn't make the cut, Will?
In Canada, what do you think Jive Bunny? Because I just want to judge, you know, how big a worldwide sensation Jive Bunny was.
I reckon it. Canada, there's a bit of a crossover with the UK, so I'm going to say top 10.
Yeah, so no, made it to number five, the album.
What?
To fifth position. Okay, let's go with a bizarre one. Germany. Was Jive Bunny...
They loved it. They fucking loved it. It's actually the new German national anthem. Come on, everybody.
Only made it to 14th in the charts.
That surprises. This stupid rabbit telling me to jive. Life is a dark misery.
Jive Bunny, the album, made it to what position in the US Billboard charts?
I reckon number one.
No.
Fuck. Number 20.
Number 26.
That's middling results.
In New Zealand... How much were the Kiwis into Jive Bunny?
I don't know anything about the Kiwis and novelty songs. I mean, da da da. Oh, that wasn't a novelty song. That was a genuine
Dave
song.
Dobbin is a legitimate incredible song. Artist.
Sorry. It seems, feels
that
a bit like a
novelty
song.
That song is a bit novelty, but he is like...
Is he really?
He's a Neil Finn style.
Really?
Like, he's like a New Zealand Paul Kelly.
Is he really?
Incredibly respected.
He's like, not makes the Foot Rot Flats guy.
No, he is.
I thought he's the
Foot Rot... Forever the Foot Rot Flats guy.
I had no idea about that.
It's a great song, Slice of Heaven, anyway. Well,
name another song by Dave Dobbin.
Cannot. To save my life.
Real Paul Kelly, a real Neil
my family. In New Zealand.
Okay.
How into Jive Bunny were they?
All right. I don't know if the Kiwis have ever been hot on novelty songs. I'm going to say that their dry sense of humor would probably have elevated it to 17.
Nine.
Ah.
Charlie, Jive Bunny the album, despite the fact that it had three number one singles in the UK, only made it to number one on the charts of any country in the entire world. What was that country?
Australia.
Australia.
So proud. I am. Australians, all let us rejoice.
On,
we made Jive Bunny number one. We have no taste in music. Ostentatious also reached number one.
How many novelty songs have made it to number one on the Australian charts?
Not as many as the UK, I don't reckon. They're mad for it. But I think we have a lot of similarities.
I'm going to see if there's any entries.
Off the top of your head.
What can I name?
Yeah.
Chris Franklin's Bloke.
Did that get to number one?
Yeah, pretty sure.
Did Morris Minor and the Majors start a rap? Get to number one? Feels like it probably did.
Feels like it did.
Opposites Attract. I feel like that got to number one.
That's
here.
Not a...
That's not a novelty song? It's got a cartoon cat.
I've been MC Scat Cat.
Not a, yeah, you're right. Sorry. So much. I mean, that is the difference when you've got the marketing budget of like a Disney. They come up with MC Scat Cat. These fucking Pickles come up with Jive Bunny.
Do you reckon MC Scat Cat ever met Jive Bunny?
Mate, they had a fucking huge gang war at the Grammys. The two posses, Jive Bunny's posse.
I'm so tough. Do you remember that from...
No.
It was like, like an ostentatious style spoken word piece.
Right,
like
it's
George
kind of Chuck
Smilovich
Norris,
or somebody like that.
It's like Chuck Norris jokes, essentially. I'm so tough, I eat Tonka truck.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That made it to number one.
I think so.
Shut Up Your Face.
Oh, shut up your face. Absolutely.
Definitely went to number one. What about Star Trek? And
I don't think there's going to be a good...
A definitive...
Yeah, answer to our question, unfortunately, without going through all the number ones, which I'm not going
to
do.
Do you think Star Trek made it to number one in Australia? I think it definitely made it to number one in the UK. What about Doctor Who? Hey, Daleks, Doctor Who.
Doctor and the TARDIS.
By KLF.
Well, by...
The pre-KLF.
The Time Lords, which was one of the... But yes, the KLF are going to rock you. Is that... KLF aren't a novelty band, though. Again, KLF
are quite... No, we say novelty band or novelty song.
But is... Well, but okay, if it's a novelty song, does like Chumbawamba... Tub Thumping,
are they a real band?
They're a real band.
I'm finding out a lot about Chumbawamba. Dave Dobbin apparently is the world's greatest like lyricist. Well, and
funny that Chumbawamba have a very similar to Dave Dobbin in that
they're not all shouty pub punk songs.
They're quite a punk, like respected, like
so. They're a legit respected band, Chumbawamba.
Yeah,
who had I thought they were like. Yeah. Aqua or something
Girl.
Like that. Yeah.
Does Barbie Girl count as
or like How a Bizarre? Novelty song? Is that a novelty song? How Bizarre? How Bizarre?
Yeah. By, no, I can't remember. But yeah, I remember the song.
I can't think of one in recent memory that's made it to number one. Did any of the Comedy Company singles like So Excellent, Couple of Days?
Absolutely. 100%. They must have.
Number one?
Oh, I don't know. Let's
just Google which Comedy Company singles went to number one, or Couple of Days, So Excellent. Did Colin Carpenter have one?
Probably. So, Couple of Days. Let's just find.
I mean, that to me feels like the bigger single. Was Kylie Mole a bigger character than Con? I feel like Con.
They were neck pretty and neck. Similar, I would say.
In terms of popularity?
Yeah, I would say
Kylie
so.
Kylie came first, though, right? I just seem to remember, like, Kylie had Kylie Minogue guesting in the sketch. She had the single first. But then Con the Fruiterer met Bob Hawke. Remember that? Oh. Ah, Mr. Hawke, when are you calling any election? Con, Couple of Days. Crowd goes crazy. This country sucks. This country sucks.
There's actually not as much information readily available on this stuff as you would as you would think.
A Couple of Days doesn't have whole web pages dedicated to it.
No, it doesn't. I'm actually surprised by that. Okay, now here we go. So, peak chart position.
Okay.
On the Australian charts for the song Couple of Days by Con the Fruiterer. What did it get to?
Did it crack the top 30?
No.
Okay. 48.
48.
Oh, are you fucking kidding? Sorry, you guys didn't see that. Will almost fell out of his chair. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, 48.
Yeah.
That's actually way too high. Like, can you find out who was behind him? Like, can you imagine your band got beaten by Con the Fruiterer on the charts?
No, I can't do that. That's too much for me.
I was, how you go down those weird, well, you'd know because this is this show, you go down those weird rabbit holes. I got on a Boom Crash Opera weird rabbit hole the other day. I don't know why I started thinking them.
Crash Opera.
Kick it in. Get it up. So it just came to me like a few days ago. It's like, that was like, I remember listening to that album, These Here Are Crazy Times.
You know what though? As relevant a message today as it was back then, because I think the one thing we can all agree on after the last year, Charlie, is these here are crazy times.
They certainly are. With Jive Bunny getting to number one in this fucking country. So I just sort of had this memory of them being one of those albums in probably 1989 as well that I listened to again and again but haven't really thought of. And I was like, whatever happened to Boom Crash Opera? I actually met Dale Ryder a few years ago at a telethon. He's a really lovely guy. And I was like, I didn't immediately recognize who he was because your memory of him when Boom Crash Opera were the band was he had that big flowing long curly hair, but he's bald now like and wears like a beanie and stuff. So I went on this deep dive and I listened to the album again. It's like, oh yeah. I mean, it's not as good as I remember, but it's very serviceable. It's got like three really good commercial pop rock.
Yeah. They play when I was working at Triple M, surprisingly, who would have thought Boom Crash Opera played at one of our events, but they were
really,
They were very good.
But not with Richard Pleasance, right?
No. Well, you know what? Don't know enough about it to say. But
well, lucky for you, Will, I went on a Wikipedia deep dive and I do know a bit about it.
So I must admit, just one of those bands that was never 100% on my radar, Boom Crash Opera. So like, I know enough of, you know, you just couldn't grow up in the era we grew up without like knowing who they were and knowing their songs, knowing Onion Skin and shit.
Yeah.
But,
well, that's funny. I wanted to ask you because my memory of that period is unclear because there was so much Jive Bunny going on, Will. Everyone right. was just jiving to the bunny. But I couldn't remember if they were big or if it was just I had that album at my house back in, before MP3s and shit when you right. would just re-listen to whatever albums you had at home a million times. But do you remember them being on like Hey Hey It's Saturday, like the pinnacle of, you know, Australian TV or anything like that?
I guess.
See, but that's I don't really
but
remember.
But I don't have any, like I have a Mandela type
100%
memory of like assuming that they should have been. So
because I started,
but I don't really have any clear or distinct.
Well, if you think of other bands from the era, like INXS or whatever.
By the way, I also know they played in an event that I did at Triple M, which was had to be within the last 2 years, and I can't in my mind
remember
place where that was either. So I think there's something about the band Boom Crash Opera
that
much
is
like Men in Black style erases your memory after consuming it, because I'm literally trying to concentrate on where it would be and everything around it's really fuzzy in my mind.
They are the perfect Mandela band because like you, I just had a memory of some of the songs. But then when I listened to the album, I couldn't remember any of, or not remember very well, the kind of just the B-side type stuff.
Yeah.
And then I started thinking, like, what's the defining image of Boom Crash Opera? I think of Dale Ryder with his big hair, but like you think of INXS, you think of the album, the cover of Kick. You think of like Big Pig, you remember that music video, you know? There's all those bands, Midnight Oil, like Dancing in Uluru, all that kind of stuff. But I can't think of a defining music video or live performance or anything of Boom Crash Opera.
No, they were just like a, I think they were just a, like a better than a really excellent pub band. Do you know what I mean? Like they were that classic sort of, you know, halfway in between being like superstars, although he like presented like a superstar, like, but that's what I mean. He had that bravado of like,
he was a great front man.
Yeah. He was just a great front man and they were like good at playing music and they like wrote catchy songs that were halfway between pop songs and rock songs. And
yeah. And they had that big 80s kind of sound, like even like Crowded House and some of their songs around about that era had that big, you know what I'm talking about? It's, I don't know the, how to describe it in terms of production, but it just feels like there's a lot of instruments. It's very produced. It's
very produced.
It's the very opposite of what would come with grunge. But so I had this idea of like, oh shit, so I don't really know anything about them. So I started reading about how the band got together. And it was when bands like INXS were starting to take off. And I think some big music mag, the equivalent of an NME, maybe it was Rolling Stone, featured 11 bands you need to watch that are going to be the next big one. And Boom Crash Opera was one of the bands. And there was a bidding war to kind of sign them up. They released a single independently, I think, called Great Wall, which, again, I can't really remember, but apparently that was one of their highest charting singles.
Should have brought that back for Trump.
Yeah, totally. Like, played the inauguration.
I mean,
no one else was.
But also, like, the amount of people who were willing to sell a song to Donald Trump, like he was doing, like, YMCA and stuff, right? Like, Boom Crash Opera could have, like, no one would have really cared, would they?
I don't think so.
No.
So they had this bidding war. They get signed and then they release that album, These Here Are Crazy Times. Onion Skin is the big hit. That's the one that everyone kind of knows. It goes, it's on a film, like a Hollywood film. It gets to number 15 on the Billboard charts, rock charts. But then everything after that is diminishing returns. And then Pleasance gets tinnitus. Is that what it's called? Tinnitus? Yep. Tinnitus? And has to leave the band. But the way they're describing their style, I was like, I might have been Mandela, because I think of Dale Ryder and I thought, what a voice, like, you know, one of those great kind of rock voices that soars. But in this Wikipedia entry, they're like, a lot of the criticism of him was he was very limited in his vocal range.
I think that they were just, yes. But that's what I mean about, like, rather than looking at them as like, because also those bands that you mentioned before, like Crowded House and like Midnight Oil and bands like that are like some INXS, like these are some of the, even like bands like Hunters and Collectors and like, you know, Paul Kelly and his bands.
Who do you think?
Like there were so many hoodoo gurus.
Do you put them like in Noiseworks category then, or are they a bit better than Noiseworks?
Oh, See, in my head, I will always would have thought that Noisy Works batted deeper than Boom Crash Opera.
They probably had more hits, but I'm talking in terms of credibility. Like, who were better musicians?
I don't know. In my mind, and I don't know anything about either of them really, like, is I would say about the same. I'd be like, I'd be as interested in going to see Noisy Works as I would in seeing Boom Crash Opera, which is not disinterested, but not overly interested.
You don't really get pub bands anymore, do you? I mean, I'm sure there are pub bands, but...
Well, you can't really go to pubs.
Yeah. But just that sound, that kind of...
Well, it always used to... No, I bet there is. I'm sure that, but I think that the pub scene, I think there is. I think it just is a bit more weddings and functions and whatever.
But yeah, like, there's no superstar, but we made those guys. Like back in the day.
They
we,
came out of the pub scene. But no, I think lead, that like...
Your front man always had to have a sleeveless tee, sweaty kind of long, dark, stringy hair, sexy, tight jeans. There's always like a guitarist who wrote most of the songs. I think
like in Melbourne, in most of like, if you go to the Tote or whatever, and you would see like Amel and the Sniffers or like bands like that, that would come out of, you know, Melbourne. No, that was what they were like. They were pub bands that became
bands. It's a specific kind of pub band. Like we didn't really have the glam metal scene of like LA or the Sunset Strip. What we produced on a mass scale and affected fashion and stuff was pub rock, right?
Yeah, that's true.
You'd agree that was the identity, but... Mm. It's funny because you see, like, I think hipsters are kind of readopting that 80s pub look. Like, there's a lot of like flannels and VB caps and stuff that are kind of hip again. Yeah, mullets, all that kind of stuff. But it's all ironic. Like, you don't see.
But is it? Because it's already been ironic. So here's the thing I would say about that. There should be, because was there a period in between where, so like, mullets have already been reclaimed ironically previously, right?
Mm-hmm.
Can you or claim something ironically that has already been ironically claimed? Or should you be ironically rebel? Has it gone back the other way as well so it can swing back the other way? It feels to me like there wasn't a, whatever the opposite, ironic. Yeah.
ironic.
You know, like
it didn't have the credibility reestablished at any.
What are you
stage.
Being ironic about?
But it's like the it's meme. Already it's like ironic. The meme we discussed last week. It's a comment good, on good a comment.
We've been sent a lot of memes.
I know it's great. Since. And then we've been made into memes, which I've loved.
I've and not understood.
No, not a one.
Not a bit of it. How quickly people understand things
that we do visually. Not understand. Yeah, I just think that look, yeah, you're right. They've claimed it back in an ironic sense of what was already considered a joke.
It's like somebody else writing a song called I'm Bringing Sexy Back and Justin Timberlake going, no, mate, I brought Sexy back and Sexy has remained here since I brought it back.
But do you see guys earnestly and girls earnestly sporting that look who are below 50? Like sometimes you'll go see like an old band tour and you'll see those guys who peaked in the 80s and they will dress like that. But... You don't see those cocksure, you know, tight jeans. Like if it were, again, if it was the hair metal scene, it'd be the equivalent of what you'd see on the Sunset Strip. You know, those guys dressed a certain way. They're in a band, sexy, sleeping their jeans, getting a tour bus. You don't really see that particular brand of pub rocker.
So someone that I'm, who's.
Commercial pub rocker, sexy pub rocker.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah.
I think there is like, yes, like you said, like a hipper, like underground. Like,
yeah, they're sensitive.
Yeah. Well, there's just a bit of flair to it. Like, I mean, we have a musician friend who's literally in the other room from us at the moment who
is a rocker.
Like, well, yeah, but also he has like a, like.
Yes, Con the Fruiter.
It is our friend, Con. Yeah. Brought over some bananas.
We asked him to come on the show. He said, couple of days.
Couple of days. So he's staying in the house until we can get it done.
He's brought his daughters, Rula, Sula, Tula, Vula.
And the guppy. The guppy's here, which is good news.
Yeah.
So he has won guise of like, yeah, what his performance that is a bit more psychedelic and of this like, you know, sort of, yeah, that Tame Impala-y sort of like world where you're, you know, making sort of psychedelic rock music. But he's also got like a, you know.
Straight up rock band.
A straight up rock band. And they have been like, they've reformed, they put some songs out and they've just gone back and done some gigs. And they're playing pubs, you know, like big pubs, good pubs, but like they're playing pubs. And it's kind of that modern day take on what pub rock was. Yeah. It's just evolved to being something that doesn't look like what it, but it still kind of does. It's still a guy with long hair thrashing a guitar. Like, there is those sort of key fundamentals that were in that pub rock stuff have just been reinterpreted into something else.
I guess I'm wondering, could you do like a Steel Panther, like a spoof band of actual musicians that spoofs, would it be possible to target that Noiseworks, Boom Crash Opera vibe? Like, if there are a band who made funny songs, but just, is it distinct enough a period?
So that, do they have to be funny? So yes. You're saying that they're kind of...
Like, in the same way that Steel Panther are playing up hair metal, yeah, and the attitudes of hair metal, where they just want to do coke and, you know, hookers, and you know, they play songs about their dicks and all that kind of stuff. Could you spoof, like, the Australian pub rock scene of the 80s? Could you be a band that comes out and, you know... What would you do? You'd be like Barnsley, you'd like scull a bottle of whiskey, you'd wear like a tight white singlet and jeans, be sweaty, long hair, maybe sing songs about the Harbour Bridge. What defined that period that you could spoof?
I don't think you can spoof that sort of Barnsley, cold chisely sort of...
Noiseworks though, more pirate shirty?
Yeah, I think maybe you could do something like that. Maybe you could just go, yeah, I think maybe you could.
Like, because you think...
I don't think there'd be room for a lot of it.
Because what you do is you play... I think that's kind of
what the Killers are, do you know what I mean, for people?
Yeah, right. They're a novelty band.
Yeah.
I'm learning so much about music. But I guess the thing is, like, then you've got to release the songs. And what do the songs sound like? Well, they have that big produced sound. And I reckon it's all that kind of soft rock subject matter. Like, think about... what's that horrible Noiseworks song? Is it not Cherry Pie?
No.
Hot Chili Woman.
Hot Chili Woman.
Which is just so bad. Like, it's a fucking sexy love song about how hot chicks are.
Hot Chili Woman, Won't You Burn For Me?
Yeah.
Hot Chili Woman, I'm in Ecstasy.
So you do songs like that. That'd be your entire catalogue.
Yes, I believe that
you... And then you'd have to have a ballad, an acoustic ballad, like More Than Words. But just something, but what would you... It's all about the hair. I'm seeing hair and pirate shirts a lot.
100% you could do it, but I wonder if it would appeal to...
Anyone.
No, I think it would appeal to hipsters. I think that, really? That would definitely could be embraced ironically. If some band just started doing that, absolutely. Like, kids at fucking festivals love Daryl Braithwaite That's singing true. Horses, right?
Yeah.
Like, if there was some band that kind of serves them the McDonald's of the music festival, where... You can go and actually just enjoy these big belting tunes that are like, but Pun you're like, anthems. I'm still cool.
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't matter. I'm wearing a muumuu, but I'm enjoying something that could basically be Noiseworks.
Well, that's how Steel Panther works. Because Steel Panther get the metal crowd who genuinely, because they're good musicians and they can play good songs, and they get the kind of novelty crowd. Oh, look at the funny fashion and, you know, the subject matter and blah, 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 blah. So you probably could do it. What would the band be called?
Bronze Tasmanian Tiger. Bronze Koala.
Sally's muscle car.
Who appeals to that? I mean, Shannon Noll plays pub rock.
Yes. Sorry, who does it appeal to? Is that what you mean? Like,
no. Well, who? Like these days, who is that? Like, for those.
Yeah, people, Shannon Noll probably would be the most like
the people who
current.
Went. The people who went to see like Noiseworks or Boom Crash Opera.
Where are they getting?
Who are they going to see these days? I mean, not that we would know, but.
I mean, and you're not talking about like old bands, like the Baby Animals still play and stuff.
No, I'm talking about who's the modern equivalent.
I reckon Shannon Noll, but he's not really that modern. I don't know. It'd be someone who won Idol or something.
What's that guy who used to be a cameraman at Channel 9 who's now like he's an Australian dude. He's very popular.
I don't know. And he plays straight ahead rock.
Yeah, you're kind of rock pop.
You know who I actually thought could have been that guy? Toby Rand. Toby Rand had that shit in spades.
So Toby, for people that don't know who Toby Rand was, he won the...
No, he didn't win it. He came runner-up.
Oh, he came runner-up. That's right.
In Excess. No, not the one after In Excess Rockstar, the Super Band one. What was that called? Can't Nova? Remember. Supernova.
Supernova, maybe.
Right, yeah, there's a reality show called Rock Band : Supernova. Imagine if there was one that was a Jive Bunny. Search for the new Jive Bunny.
That would be an amazing
Father and
show.
Sons.
You know what?
Cutting swing records
three
together.
Number one fucking singles in one year. You can't argue with that.
Yeah, so Toby Rand was an Australian It was a great show. I loved the first season, the INXS one, and the second one was great. And he was awesome.
Well, like, wasn't
he was
there a Motley Crue one or something? No, not Motley Crue.
Well, Tommy Lee Jones was in that band, in the Supernova. Yeah, because it was a super band where it was the dude from Metallica, him.
Yeah, no, I remember. Someone else. That's right. Yes, that's what I'm getting confused in my head.
Yeah.
Okay, so, and so Toby was on that season, wasn't he?
Yeah.
And he had one particular song, which was like a song that he had done with his band, Duke Cartel. And so Duke Cartel would have been a classic example of what we're talking about. If Duke Cartel had blown up into, like, could have blown up into a Noiseworks or a Boom Crash Opera. I think that's exactly, yeah.
I think that I actually, when he played that song live for the first time, I just don't need it. Chemical healing. It's got, like, because the crowd went nuts. He fucking
Grinspoon.
Yes. Yes, 100%. But do they still play straight ahead rock? And isn't Phil kind of, he's a bit alternative. He's not your,
yeah,
but, he's not your Toby Rand.
But they're like, still pretty much.
Pirate shirt. Yeah. Could Phil wear a pirate shirt? Toby Rand, yes. Because Toby Rand went all out with eyeliner, spiky hair,
yeah, he had
leather
like
bracelets.
He had like, you know what he had the potential to be? And
spokesman for Dangerfield.
Absolutely, firstly, 100%. But yeah, do you know that US band Imagine Dragons?
Yes.
Imagine Dragons are Noiseworks on a huge scale, right? That's the band I was trying to think of before. It's a bit harsh on the Killers. Like they, you know, but Imagine Dragons are your classic example of like, it's a show. Like, I've watched Imagine Dragons, like, a live show on YouTube one night because I was like, I'm just going to, because I'd never really been captivated by their music, but they're a really popular act. And I was like, I'm going to have a look and just see what this is all about.
I'm going to see if I, too, can imagine dragons.
It was just one night when I was actually just trying to imagine dragons.
And I needed
some advice from YouTube because my imagination's gone away.
Normally, I'm chasing them. This time, I'm going to imagine them.
So it's exactly that style of entertainment.
Yeah.
It's huge choruses, everyone starts playing drums. Like, it's a rock and roll show. Mm. Like, and it's really good, but it could be a pop show with a bit of a twist. It could be like a, it's not enough, like a real rock show. It's like Coldplay for people who want to see sort
something
of like
soft. Something. People who think Coldplay is just a little too hard.
It's like, what if Coldplay played more electric guitars?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I don't know. I don't think there is. I mean, there probably is. We wouldn't know.
Yeah, so I reckon if Duke Cartel, because that single, when he played that song, I thought it was so great. But then the single came out and it lost something in the recording. I don't think it was ever as good as that first night he played it. But you're right. Duke Cartel could have been the Noiseworks.
Well, Tobes will be rapped that we've...
Well, he's still doing all right, isn't
he? He's doing great. And he's an awesome dude. I hung out here. Not as much as I would have liked to, but a couple of times when we were in LA, we caught up with each other. And I always liked his vibe just in general. He was a... You know,
yeah, he was good on the show too. Yeah,
super entertaining.
Well, what did he come up with? What was the saying? The Evs.
Evs.
Yeah,
right?
Which I feel like he injected into the worldwide lexicon because I hadn't really heard it. I know he brought it from Australia, but I feel like he popularized it.
He might have.
Evs. Bringing it back.
Do we have some mail or anything? Do we need to get through some correspondence to our podcast?
Yes.
Because I like to, you know, we like to keep on top of these things these days. We have a website. It's called tofop.com, and you can go there and you can listen to this show and past episodes of this show, see all James Fosdyke's original artwork for this show. You can also hear my podcast, Fofop. Justin Hamilton was on last week. I have not worked out who's going to be on this week yet, so TBC.
If you go to the website now, there's, before you listen to this, what I'm trying to say is the episode before of Tofop before this, we talk about Tenet, and you and Justin also talk about Tenet.
Yeah, exactly.
And so you get double Tenet by going to the website.
Exactly. And you can just hear all of us try to work our way through it, and you've not seen it.
No.
It didn't
all
really...
I know is poop goes back into bums.
See, we covered off some things that Justin and I didn't get to, and that's important. So, Two Guys, One Cup. Charlie has been doing a summer series of catch-ups and interviews and discussions with people about why they support the particular teams.
That's right. And there's a guy on This Week who many people probably don't know, but you would know him. Will Rolston, he's the producer of the Marty Shear Gold Show.
Barracks for the Brisbane Lions.
Mad keen supporter. Now, he came to me via Michael Chamberlain. He said, if you're going to do an episode on the Brisbane Lions, I got the guy for you. And I was not disappointed. And the great thing too is he's a bit younger than us.
Yes.
So hearing him talk about that great era of 2001 to 2003, like there's this kind of bittersweet because he knows they existed, but he was too young to have actually experienced it. And he's just got this cockiness about him because he thinks his team he's got now, they're going to go on he didn't say three-peat, but he's pretty confident. It's great.
I should mention to him at some stage that I saw all three of those premierships. Live at the ground.
Who's on Philosophy this week?
This week. Oh, okay. So a bit of a Josh Earle, firstly, who was recently on Two Guys, One Cup with you. And it's an incredible episode. It's just, he is so honest about so many different things. It's really compelling and really entertaining. So I recommend that one.
Speaking of people who need support, we have a Patreon.
Now, even more important, our safety net. Now to our safety net.
We have a Patreon. It's patreon.com/tofop. We put on a bunch of bonus content there. We're intending to put some more regular content up there this year. So if you want to get on the ground floor of that, you can sign up for any amount. There's been a lot of support in the last couple of months. I thought maybe it would sort of dip off over Christmas, but everyone has been great. And it really does help. Like, we can do all this stuff and we're getting new digs and all this kind of stuff because of the money that you guys are putting into the show. So thank you very much. You can also go to the website to send us some mail. There's a little contact form down the bottom. So you can be like Nin, who says, the biggest water slide in Norway. To Colin Fopp. Hey guys, Nina here. Not the first time I've written in. I asked you once upon a time about Max Headroom. Well, that sounds like very much in our territory. Anyway, I've been loving the Norwegian narrative of Elias and the biggest horse in Norway. Quick recap. Elias was a listener who was kicked by the biggest horse in Norway, which led to the creation of the Tofop 12. He also followed up by sending us a video of a giant water slide his brothers had built on his farm in Norway. If you want to see that, I've done a reaction video on our Patreon. That's patreon.com/Tofop. Whilst born and bred in Sydney, very close to where you boys recently resided, I am actually proudly half Norwegian, thanks to my mother. Her mother was one of 12. And last June, wow, just don't brush past that, one of 12.
I know, I had your own Tofop 12. And actually 12.
One of 12, and last June, Midsummer's Eve, my Norwegian extended family had planned a family reunion in Norway on the west coast of Kristiansund. And then COVID ruined it all. I've been to Norway a few times and I've contact with quite a few of my family, but I feel I now have a purpose when international travel does resume, as we will be going at some point. So I feel it is my duty to find the elusive Elias and what must surely be the biggest grave in all of Norway.
Oh yeah, good point. Take a shovel.
Little postscript to those who need a recap. The biggest horse in Norway that kicked Elias, it started this whole thing, died.
I am sorry, because we often say to people, if you're a new listener to the show, jump in with the new episodes and then go backwards and stop listening when you feel uncomfortable. But for an arc like this, I'm sorry you've jumped in at the point that you know that the biggest horse in all of Norway is now no longer with us, has gone to the biggest stable in the sky.
When you hear it thundering in Norway, it's not thunder.
That's the sound of the biggest horse in all of Norway galloping through the clouds.
We still don't know the name. I want to go to the tomb of the unknown biggest horse in all of Norway.
Never had a name.
So, should I go to the biggest grave in all of Norway, which would house the biggest horse, or maybe he's buried under the biggest water slide in all of Norway, but one thing's certain, they have the tiniest swimming pools.
Oh.
Now, I don't know if that's a comment on the video, because they land in a pool from the water slide, but maybe it's some dig. Maybe it's a Norwegian in-joke. Mm-hmm. You've got a tiny water slide, Sven. I don't know. It's like a meme to me. I will start to do my research and ask my extended family if they know the biggest horse in Norway. We'll keep you posted. Perhaps we need to start the Norwegian Podcast Festival, That would certainly give the Dum Dum Club's Koh Samui Podcast Festival a run for their money. Take care, guys. Mate, I haven't traveled internationally in so long. I will do a podcast. If you guys want to set up a podcast for us in Norway, a podcast festival, we'll go. We'll do it on the grave of the biggest horse. Or is that in bad taste?
I feel like it's something you should have run by me before you agreed to, certainly.
All right. We'll do a festival in Norway with the biggest slide. How about that? So people can be sliding and partying and stuff while we're doing our podcast. Or do you want them listening? Well, that would be pretty weird to just be talking on loudspeakers while a bunch of drunk Norwegians are going down a water slide.
What do you think is more likely, that we could get the Norwegians to listen to us, or that we can just get them to go on the slides and we do our thing? Because I think it's the latter, not the former.
I didn't even think that through. English is not the first language and where they're talking about.
Also, fucking... at the moment, we know we have one listener in all of Norway and one person who may at some stage in the future visit Norway.
She offered.
Yeah, but she's not even there.
Yeah, it's a good point.
It's a brave offer for someone who doesn't even know if they can leave the country.
You haven't seen the video, but...
I say, no way, Jose.
Elias's brothers gathered quite a crowd for the biggest water slide.
I haven't seen it yet, no.
Like, it was, I would say... maybe 300 people there. So that's like, we've had 300 to a live TOEFOP before. I'd be okay with that.
In Norway?
Yeah. No, I'm saying, but we have an in with Elias. Elias needs to prove to his brothers that he's just as macho as they are. Yeah. Sure, guys, you built the biggest slide in all of Norway. I'm going to build the biggest podcast in all festival in all of Norway. How's that for macho?
Yeah, but we haven't even hit up Elias. This is independent of Elias, this suggestion.
Yeah, but we...
What's his name of this correspondent?
This is Nikki.
Nikki has suddenly said, I'm going to...
Oh, no, sorry, that's not Nikki. I don't know, I deleted it.
Okay. Well, the unknown correspondent.
I didn't delete it. I unstarred it. Now I can't find it.
Okay, all right.
This is from Nikki.
Wow.
Robot Wars.
Okay.
Hey, guys. Long-time listener, first-time caller, fellow doggies. Tragic. I saw a meme today that said, why is everyone saying humans are fucked if we ever get to war? Why is everyone saying humans are fucked if we ever get to war with robots? Just throw a cup of water on them. And I wanted to know your thoughts because I spiraled on this for a while. Is it the kind of meme that would make you spiral? It's pretty straightforward. If that was the meme, if it was... literally those words in a picture of Dexter or something.
Yeah, but that can't...
That can't be the meme.
The meme. The meme's got to be more than that.
So it's like a photo of a cup of water and a robot upside down, and it's like unknown error.
Maybe.
Fuck, that's terrible.
I don't know what a meme is, so that could be a meme. That sounds like a meme.
Okay, so Nikki spiraled on this for a while. The idea that we could stop robots with a cup of water. Maybe the rising sea levels and impending climate doom will work in our favor, and in our nearing desolate future, we just drown them all in the ocean that has come all the way up to Uluru. Or if we're at the stage of an all-out robot war, if we're in an all-out robot war, are they at a level of sentience and intelligence that they've developed waterproof or at least shower-resistant technology?
100%. It's like, that's got to be part of what the meme's about.
I mean, I don't think that...
I think they're waterproof
now. I don't think
the
robot war is coming in terms of hand-to-hand combat.
You can swim with headphones on at the pool. Like,
yeah.
You're telling me that the robots can't put something on that's going to protect them? Like, the idea that somehow you just throw a cup of water on a robot. So it's got to be a statement. It can't just be about throwing a cup of water on the robot. Surely this meme's got to mean something else. There's got to be a deeper meaning to what is going on, right?
Yeah.
It's got to be a statement about the futility of fighting back against technology or something, surely, right? Because we're done already. It's already advanced enough.
I reckon.
I love when they put out those robotics videos of all those fucking war machines dancing, and everyone's like, look how good they dance. And yeah. I'm like, yeah, that's the only thing they've taught them to do.
But why would they need, it's not going to be like Terminator. They won't need, they'll maybe have cleanup crews, but it'll be like missiles and gassings and all that kind of shit. Well, Mass warfare.
The environment, some sort of global pandemic.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Exactly. Oh, wait a minute.
Hey. What?
But I don't think that, you know, unless you get to the
fact that three people have all the money and nobody else has any money. Do you reckon that'll become a problem soon?
Nah. Well, I love that that's the choice, is that the, we have a climate crisis or we have an impending robot apocalypse to choose between. What do you, what would you prefer?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Nice. I've been so busy thinking about the fact
if you that had one, be future, one
or the other. Which of them is...
A desolate wasteland or a technological nightmare?
I think I'm more interested in seeing how the technical nightmare plays out. I just think, you know, that's the one that I'd be like, oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. It'll be more interesting. Because
you know what a desert looks like.
Yeah, right. I could just drive to the desert.
But you've never seen combine harvesters for human beings. And you're kind of curious.
That's a way to go. If you're going to go. I feel like combine harvester is a better way to go than like climate disaster.
Slow,
like
long, torturous death.
Hot.
Or...
It's already too
hot. But I guess
hot.
It depends what the robots have in store for us. If it's a Matrix future where we're just kind of enslaved, but we are kind of enslaved, Will, because we're on our phones and shit all the time, man. Did you know that?
Fuck, you blow my mind. Are we in an episode of Black Mirror?
Yeah, I think there will be, if there was some kind of torture involved, like they needed our blood or some kind of...
Yeah,
like,
so there might be some sort of like incriminations, I suppose. Like,
I mean, in a lot of ways, nature is crueler than a machine, because killing us the way nature will kill us is not very efficient. You imagine a machine will be, put something in their hearts, put something in their brains. Be
nature
quick.
Will fucking kill us as soon as look at us. Like,
but it won't be efficient. It'll be slow and painful because it...
Exactly. Got... But it will kill us. It will find a way to fucking kill us. It's amazing that it doesn't kill us more often than it already kills us. Like, our greatest achievement as human beings is like building up ways to just not be killed on a daily basis by nature, because it's fucking deadly and it's getting more deadly. I don't think that's going to be a fun way to go, because it's just going to be a series of disasters. Your house will burn down, your house will flood, your like community will get ruined, like things won't grow back, the ecosystem will get all out of whack. Like, it's just going to be a lot of mosquitoes. There's going to be so many mosquitoes.
Oh my God, so many mosquitoes.
Yeah, like it's just not going to be fun.
Yeah. Bring on the robot
apocalypse.
Whereas
robot, like I feel like how quickly does it happen? Because you feel like it could happen just like...
Instantaneously. We wouldn't even know it. Just drop a bomb.
But they don't even need to drop a bomb. Well, I suppose a bomb. But like it...
Would there be any need for the robots to forewarn us or to prevent unnecessary suffering? Would that fit into their calculations?
I mean, it depends who's programmed them, right? Isn't it that the point? And human beings have programmed them, so there will be evil in there.
There'll be some unnecessary torture.
Unnecessary torture and evil clause that they put in there for shitposting purposes.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll take it. I'll take it as long as, yeah, I'm not getting probes put in me and I have to watch horrible.
What about if I throw alien invasion into the mix?
Yeah, now that. Bring on that. Now, that would be trippy, dude. Imagine. What, are they like interdimensional aliens or are they from like another planet?
Probably both.
Oh, shit. This is the best movie ever. No, I'd definitely like to see aliens, because I think that would answer a lot of questions. And I think the infighting amongst... religious people would be fantastic, because who's going to claim them as God? Who's going to say it's Satan? They wouldn't comment on the robots.
Okay, I'm throwing another one in the mix. Religious apocalypse.
Which religion, though?
Let's just say, like, for your sake, Catholic. All right. Like, yeah, the full fire and brimstone judgment day.
Yeah.
Like, apocalypse.
Oh, I'd be all right then. Sweet, I'm going to heaven. See you later, suckers. I get to take one person. Who do I choose? Well... You know, well, I mean, you and I could be podcasting.
You guys heard of Robert Harvey?
You and I could be podcasting in heaven with the world's biggest horse.
Well, are you assuming that the world's biggest horse went to heaven?
Oh, you think it went to hell? It's not an earthquake. That's the biggest horse
kicked
in Norway.
Kicked Elias in the head once. Like, I don't know. You're
fucking right. It went to hell. Elias, you still haven't told us how the horse died. Like, I'd like to know. And where is it buried? And can we find it? If this listener wants to go and get photos, would you be cool with that?
Like, make it a tourist destination.
Do we want to exhume the corpse? Dig up those bones? I mean, is that... That's probably too much, right?
That's too much, yeah. Oh, but one day in the future... When they are putting together the Bill and Ted style, when they're putting together the, you know, TOEFOP University, because... the power of our podcasting has changed the world, and they're recreating various moments from the TOEFOP universe, like in this museum. They can dig up the bones of the biggest horse in all of Norway and kind of reconstruct them dinosaur style.
like in the like
Jurassic
the,
Park,
like in the front
when the biggest horse in Norway ruled the earth.
Oh yeah, I've limited my expectations. I thought it was like museum style, but yeah, no, it's an interactive.
We get the DNA Jurassic style of the biggest horse in all of Norway, Norway and create a and park of horses, it,
and you can go.
And ride.
And ride.
Not just
the
one.
The biggest horse in all of Norway.
But then we get too arrogant. We try and take the DNA of like a chameleon and a bat and a dragon and mix it with a horse to create like a super horse, biggest horse in all of Norway.
Well, yeah, that's our ambition. No, the army come and they're like...
weaponize we can, that giant horse.
We can weapon it. Like, what we've always wanted in the army was slightly bigger horses.
Okay, that's it for now. Yes. We have a long letter. Do you have time to do another 10 minutes on to put on Patreon?
Let's do it. Let's do it while
okay, we're here. We have a letter from another listener, which is kind of more in-depth. She's asking for hypotheticals. So if you like that kind of gear on TOEFOP, come over to our Patreon. You'll find it there real soon. I'm Charlie Clausen.
I'm Will Anderson.